Welcome to Federal Insights for July, discussing the future of work, sponsored by Verizon.
So today in the Air Force, outside of some public offerings where the providers may have 5G in the local area, there's not a whole lot out there just yet. What we are doing is we're working very closely with the Undersecretary of Defense for Research and Engineering on a handful of experiments, to include the one at Joint Base San Antonio, where they're looking at the secure core and at 5G's use with telemedicine. At Hill Air Force Base, we're looking at a spectrum coexistence, spectrum dynamic spectrum sharing, things along those lines. It's in, making sure we can deconflict with airborne radar and other types of sensors like that. At Nellis Air Force Base, we have an experiment where we are looking at concept, looking at the disaggregated and distributed air operations center. So today, our air operations centers really are large targets that aren't overly resilient. They're immovable along those lines. And now with 5G, we're looking at the concept of being able to disperse it, have it on the move, increase resiliency, those things. So the range there at Nellis is an ideal place to do that. So that's moving along there. At Hickam Air Force Base, working closely with the Navy, we're looking at 5G's implications at the flight line to see how it can improve flight line maintenance and other capabilities there. And then the last one of the experiments we're looking at is at Tinker Air Force Base. We're looking at how we can use 5G to enhance training in general. So not just specific to flight training or anything else, just training in general. So whether it's augmented reality, virtual reality capability, or just other types of capabilities that 5G will help enable. The other thing that's going on that's not directly 5G, but relates to it, is we have a regional implementation of 4G LTE on the path to 5G. We're doing where we're nearing completion in the southeast region of 10 bases, where Verizon had won that lease agreement down there, and so it's they're putting LTE in with the ability to move to 5G as we're able to. In a couple of bases, they're already moving towards 5G. Tyndall being the best example because when we had the hurricane come through there and cause damage, the flip side of that, it created an opportunity for us to go in and kind of build towards the future. So it's kind of the base of the future concept there. And we just let the lease agreement for what we for Region 2, which is out in the central west area. That's just getting started. I haven't had a whole lot of movement with it just yet. And the idea is that by calendar year 24 to fully have, you know, it's LTE now, but by 24, we expect to fully have 5G publicly available on every base, and also to have really figured out how we're going to bring private 5G in for things like warehouses, depots, things along those lines. So that was a very long answer to your very short question.
And just to talk a little bit more about those regional contracts, I guess the idea is that these will have the infrastructure that you need. So what exactly are you building in these regions through those contracts?
Yeah, so one thing to say is it's not a contract, it's an opportunity to lease agreement. So the Air Force owns nothing in this case. What we're doing is giving the provider who wins gets a lease, gets a 25-year lease to come in, real property lease to come in and build their towers, do what they need to do to provide the services. Do that for a couple reasons. One is the Air Force doesn't want to be in the business of maintaining cellular towers. It also it incentivizes the providers to come in to those bases. So one of the other things we're doing is within a region, we're putting more attractive bases with what would be less attractive bases from a business case. So give you an idea, like out west, the Region 2 includes Nellis Air Force Base, which is near Vegas, and Luke Air Force Base, which is near Phoenix. Obviously, two areas that the providers are very interested in, but it also includes places like Minot Air Force Base in North Dakota, which, you know, limited population there, may not be a place that they would have necessarily emphasized early development, but in order for them to get to Nellis, they have to also provide for Minot. So that's kind of a lot of the incentives there moving forward, and it gives the providers the opportunity to come in. As they come in, we're encouraging them to sublease, though, too, so that you're not just it won't necessarily be just that one provider. It's going to be opportunities to have significantly increased coverage across multiple providers to give us options and hopefully reduce cost as we move forward.
And I'd assume that, you know, the reason that these areas don't have the LTE that we're used to with our regular cell phones and things like that is, one, they're areas that are pretty sparsely populated, as you mentioned, but also they don't necessarily have the security that a Defense Department component would need compared to, you know, just being able to connect regularly with your phone and do it securely, right?
Yeah, so obviously the more rural ones, that's an obvious one. But for ones that are near population centers, because the towers may not be on the base today because they don't have a lease agreement or a real property that they own, they only have so much coverage. So we have, you know, Buckley Air Force Base, which is just outside Denver, has some significant gaps in coverage on base because there's directly on base, there is limited capacity. So one of the things this does is allows the providers get to that. And it also, because it's public cellular, it actually helps anything that's near the base. It actually improves capacity even beyond the base for things. So there's a lot of incentives for the providers to come in and do these things.
You know, I wanted to talk about your role as, you know, someone who's in the Pentagon overseeing all of these 5G initiatives. What do these experimentations and test beds provide for the Air Force, and what will they be providing over the next few years in terms of informing, future strategy and in terms of the way that you will be going forward with 5G and other technologies like that?
Yeah, so that's a really interesting question. So as we move out, one thing is it's actually vetting the capability, and it's kind of interesting. So in some cases, we've asked for some things that weren't quite ready for prime time, and in other cases, we've asked for things that before we even completed putting the test bed in, they'd already evolved to the next level and just automatically replaced it with the next piece. So some areas are moving faster than others, which is, I guess, kind of be expected. The other things, we just don't know what we don't know yet. 5G is somewhat new. A lot of the 5G in the U.S. runs on what is called like a non-standalone architecture. So essentially it's 5G running on the LTE network. So that's the predominance today. So you don't get the full benefits of 5G because it's somewhat limited until you get to the full standalone. And so the providers in some of the major cities are already putting a lot of the standalone piece in there. That's where you get the significantly higher bandwidth, the significantly larger density, so you can get to all of your Internet of Things devices, all the sensors in the field, get to the true benefits that 5G brings as we move forward. So we're still trying to figure out what all that means as we move forward. And so that's what the experiments are great is not only do we get to see it in place, but I think it's going to help us understand better the art of the possible. So we could better go after it as we move out, because even with this, the public capabilities we're bringing in, there's going to be areas like in warehouses, depots, things like that, where we're going to want to have private networks to do what we need to do and actually control as we move on. And then on the public side, the other thing that's key to all this is getting a zero trust security architecture in place. Once you have that, I don't care what network I'm running on, and that's going to allow wherever you are in the U.S. with any type of 5G or even LTE coverage to be able to do, you know, DoD level work. So it's going to be interesting over the next few years to see how far we get, and how quickly we get there.
And one of the interesting things about 5G is that it's not all just one thing moving forward, right? There's different companies that have different sorts of coverage. There's different, as you said, private networks, public networks, and all that sort of stuff. How are you keeping abreast of everything, staying in contact with industry to ensure that DoD is staying ahead of not only the technological advances, but also of adversaries like China and Russia?
Regularly meet with the big companies, and that's a given, and that's a no-brainer. But constantly looking for a lot of those smaller companies out there, the ones that are really doing the innovative things, the ones at the pointy edge. So back before COVID, when we could travel and stuff, we'd make a couple trips every year to Silicon Valley. We try and get to a lot of the trade shows and conferences because you just don't, you don't know what you don't know. Because of COVID and restrictions on travel, it kind of changed things. But it allowed us some time to do some of our own research and find some of the other companies that are out there. The other thing is within the Air Force, we have AFWERX, which is one of our innovation organizations. And for small businesses, they offer the Small Business Innovation Research Projects. And so it's an opportunity for a lot of the smaller businesses to come in and prove out a lot of their capabilities. And that's been a great way to get a lot of these smaller companies in to not just prove out what they have, but to start building the relationships with the Department of Defense as we move forward. So do we know about everything that's out there, and do we stay abreast ahead of everything? Absolutely not. I mean, there's so much there, but I think we do a pretty good job. And as things come up, we obviously dig into what makes sense. But I don't know how else to answer that.
Sure. And, you know, what do those smaller companies afford you? Because obviously they're not the ones that are building out the infrastructure. That's the Verizons, the AT&Ts, and companies like that. But, you know, these small companies probably bring you, some sort of benefit. And what sort of benefits do they bring?
So they're agile and flexible. So a small company can pivot much more easily than a large company can. There's a certain amount of inertia in big businesses, whereas a small company can react, change. They tend to be a little more innovative because they're, while the big companies are throwing a lot of money at innovation, they're not necessarily right there at the cutting edge. A lot of the smaller companies are directly out of academia. It's work that people did related to their dissertations. It's truly there. And they're risk takers. You know, they're in a position that they're not answering to stockholders. They're answering to is their desire and their passion to move out on what they're trying to do. So the right answer is the right combination. You need the large companies to provide what they provide, and it's just kind of your stability and whatnot. But the small companies, they're really the innovators. They're the ones that are pushing the edge, getting to where we need to be. And it's amazing. You go back 10 years ago, there was probably a few hundred IT cyber companies out there. I mean, now, you just everywhere you turn, there's companies popping up left and right, and they're all doing absolutely amazing things. So, it's agility and flexibility is what they bring.
We're going to take a quick break. We're talking with James Butel, the Department of the Air Force's Deputy Chief Technology Officer. I'm your moderator, Scott Massioni, and you're listening to Federal Insights, sponsored by Verizon.
For 15 years, the federal community of government managers, executives, appointees, and contractors has started its day with me, Tom Temin, host of The Federal Drive, our daily program of the latest headlines and interviews with people behind the news, your go-to source for information about everything from IT to pay and benefits. Be informed, stay informed. Start your morning with me, Tom Temin, on The Federal Drive. Listen on air on the Federal News Network app and on Spotify.
Welcome back to Federal Insights, sponsored by Verizon. Today, we're talking with James Butel, the Department of the Air Force's Deputy Chief Technology Officer, and I'm your moderator, Scott Massioni. I'm going to ask you what seems like a simple question, but probably isn't one, which is, every day there's a commercial on TV that says, I can tap into 5G, or we want to give you a free 5G-enabled phone, or all that sort of stuff. Where is the 5G infrastructure within the United States right now? And then how much of that can the military tap into? Because I understand, there's certain security measures that you want to take into account compared to what I do on my regular iPhone.
Yeah, so that comes back to, what you mean by 5G. For the non-standalone that runs on the LTE architecture, 5G the big three are pretty much everywhere. If you're near a big city or even a reasonably sized city, you probably have 5G capability. In the major cities, it's probably full standalone 5G. And so, they use where they're getting the significant bandwidth, the significant benefits. So from a Air Force perspective, if your base is near a major city, there's probably 5G coverage there. Now, granted, it's public 5G, so a great point about the security issues, but that's why I brought up the zero trust capability. So once you have a zero trust architecture in place, it's no longer about securing the network. It's securing the data and the user on that network as you go through it. And so the two coming together is what's going to be really interesting. So, today it depends. If I'm out in the middle of Montana, I may not even have 4G out there, let alone 5G. But if I'm here in the middle of DC, there's all kinds of 5G coverage. The other thing is, you made a good point too, that it should be obvious to people, but isn't. just because you have 5G coverage doesn't mean your phone's going to work. You have to have a 5G capable phone, and getting people to understand that that's going to require a change in the inventory as we move out too, is kind of an interesting thing. But on the flip side, I think that you have a lot of people in their personal lives that tend to be a little more leaning forward. So they've already moved to 5G. They're already getting used to it. So it should make the transition easier when we finally get there.
I want to move a little bit toward the future. Obviously, this is a very nascent time for 5G, but it's finally starting to catch on a bit. You know, as you said, we're starting to see it in major cities and things like that. What can 5G give to the Air Force years down the road once it finally has become the full fleshed out idea that it is? What does that add to the capabilities that the Air Force is trying to build out through the National Defense Strategy and other strategies that it has out right now?
5G, so as we move out and as we're trying to become more network-centric, more data-centric in everything we do, you've probably heard ideas out there like the Joint All-Domain Command and Control and the Air Battle Management System. And a lot of the keys to that is the sensors in the field. You know, it's data from everywhere. 5G is going to allow us to make optimal use of that data at speed. So you're going to be able to ingest that data. You're going to be able to ingest that data quickly. You're going to be able to make use of it. It's not going to require hard cables. You're not going to have fiber everywhere. It's not going to require specialized links out there, or things along those lines. It's going to be much more ubiquitous as we move out. So it's a I think 5G is going to want to be the most important enablers to the mission set moving forward. There is, in the interim, what you're going to see is niches where it has tremendous impact. So in the warehouses and the depots, as we look to bring 5G into them, you're going to see, you know, much like what Amazon does today and a lot of these other companies, to where it's all wireless and everything else. We're not there yet. And it's going to allow us to go directly to 5G in some of those cases. So we're going to get the full benefits now. So you're going to increase automation. You're going to, from a maintenance perspective, now sometimes it's hard for the airmen on the flight line. They're trying to reach back to get their manuals, do these things. 5G is going to enable you to have access anywhere you're at to what you need. It's even going to allow you to reach out to experts that may be at a different base to help you troubleshoot things. It's going to allow you to do training in a virtual environment. It's going to allow you to do maintenance in a virtual environment so that when those folks, the subject matter experts helping you, they can actually see it, you know, in a manner that the it's not just them looking at a piece of paper or something along those lines. So I think the list of things that it can do to help us it's not endless, but boy, it's close to it. And I haven't even gotten into some of the telemedicine capabilities and some of the other things out there that, you know, flight training, we think it's going to be huge for that. Because of the reduced latency and stuff, you're going to have much better real-time interactions. It's going to allow us to have disaggregated training much more effectively than what we have today.
Right. And I mean, it seems like, especially when it comes to JADC2 and ABMS and things like that, that 5G will really enable a lot of the things maybe we see on sci-fi movies today, where, you know, pilots and airmen and other people have screens or whatever virtual reality where they're able to see data and sensors real time as quickly as they can. Can you just talk about how much of a force multiplier that is, you know, when one person can see that much data at one time and be able to share it and talk with, you know, leaders in real time or decision makers and things like that?
Well, so absolutely, from a decision maker perspective, having that information to you in a useful format is huge. So now you're better informed. You have better insights into what's going on. You can make better, more timely decisions as you move out. For the folks in the field, it is that advantage that you're going to need. You know, as we see our adversaries out there, they continue to improve and advance and get where they need they are. And anything we can do to make not just make us more lethal in the fight, but to be able to protect our own folks, to be able to put them in a position that while they are that lethal actor, they're also in a safer environment and they can make the decisions to protect them and their wingman as they move out. So, it's going to be interesting to see. You know, some of those capabilities exist today, but they're not fully vetted. And a lot of cases, it's the comlinks is the number one thing holding them back. So as we get that in place, I think the sci-fi analogy is absolutely spot on, and maybe we won't have transporters and holodecks, but we're heading that direction.
Right. One thing we haven't touched on yet is artificial intelligence, and I know that the Air Force and DoD as a whole are putting a lot of a lot of money into that at this point, and really trying to make it ubiquitous within the Defense Department. Is this a way that, or can 5G help enable AI in any way, or machine learning?
It goes both ways. Not only does 5G enable AI, but AI is going to help enable 5G. So let me explain that. So the heart of AI is data. And your AI, especially from a machine learning perspective, it's only as good as the data you have, the amount of data you have. So 5G is going to be able to get you much more data, much more timely data. So it is going to make your AI much more effective, because no matter how good that AI algorithm is, if it doesn't have the data to train on and understand what it needs to do, it's just not going to be as effective. On the flip side, because 5G now is no longer about the hardware, it's about software in the back end. It's a virtualized environment. You're going to have edge data centers all over the place based on it. Having that AI in place is going to be a huge enabler to make 5G more effective. And one of the best examples of that is with the dynamic spectrum sharing, spectrum coexistence things. AI is going to be the key thing to help enable us, the users, to be able to use 5G within similar frequency ranges to deconflict it, so it's so you don't have any flight safety issues. You also don't have a reduced performance, things along those lines. So it's a two-way street. 5G helps make AI better, and AI is going to help make 5G better.
And just a final question for you, kind of bringing things back toward what you're doing right now. To get to what we've just talked about, what do you see as your biggest challenges? And if you'd like, you highlight some successes that you feel that the Air Force has really had in its journey since you've started awarding these contracts and have started on your 5G journey.
Yeah, so success-wise, we're finally getting the test beds up and running. So it's a little bit early for that in a lot of cases. I mean, we're going to continue to learn and get where we need to be. But I think, I guess the big success there is we've learned a lot from these initial, the first couple of test beds, and it's going to make the following ones go that much quicker, and it's going to be easier as we move on. So it's less about 5G, and it's more about the setup piece. Limitations going forward. So obviously budget's always a huge issue. There's some policy stuff out there, some unique things. So when we start talking about real property and some of the spectrum approval processes, we're looking at how we can make those things much more efficient to get where we need, to the speed of need, or much closer to it as we move out. Some of it's going to be getting the users trained up to understand the capabilities, because, in a lot of cases, if you don't understand the capability exists, you can't get the most out of it. So there's going to be some of that as we move forward. And then just trying to integrate it into the overall architecture. So there's going to be cases, we obviously know there's going to be niches where 5G makes perfect sense. But I think as it becomes more ubiquitous, we need to get to the point in time that you don't really care what network you're riding on, whether it's 5G, it's fiber, it's a Wi-Fi, whatever the case is. And so just trying to, there's going to be that learning curve and getting to where we need to be as we move forward.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights for July, sponsored by Verizon on Federal News Network.
For 15 years, the federal community of government managers, executives, appointees, and contractors has started its day with me, Tom Temin, host of The Federal Drive, our daily program of the latest headlines and interviews with people behind the news, your go-to source for information about everything from IT to pay and benefits. Be informed, stay informed. Start your morning with me, Tom Temin, on The Federal Drive. Listen on air on the Federal News Network app and on Spotify.
Here's Brian Campo from the Department of Homeland Security on the Federal Executive Forum's Profiles in Excellence, spotlighting chief technology officers, sponsored by Hitachi Vantara Federal.
We're always trying to mature our Zero Trust. I think I've talked about in the past, sort of our two-year forecast for Zero Trust. One of the things that'll be really interesting is bringing data into the Zero Trust fold.
To listen to the whole program from Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsnetwork.com Search Federal Executive Forum.
Hitachi Vantara Federal is built to support your mission and vision. We empower federal agencies in the digital domains that matter most: the data center, tactical and strategic data operations, and digital transformation. We bring together an unmatched portfolio of edge-to-core to cloud infrastructure, AI, and analytics that enable our customers' digital missions and propel our nation forward. Let us accelerate your data journey from infrastructure to advanced analytics. Contact Hitachi Vantara Federal today at HitachiVantaraFederal.com.
Splunk's data-to-everything D2E platform drives fast, confident decisions and decisive actions through powerful real-time insights to ensure mission success. Here's Juliana Vita, Chief Technical Advisor, Public Sector with Splunk.
Let's say that there was a breach at some agency. Well, what happens? Oh, well, let's set up a war room. Okay, then somebody from each department, they go in that room and they shut the door and they all point fingers at each other. They say, oh, it was the network people, or oh, it was the patching people, oh, the security people. And they waste time and energy trying to figure out whose fault it was that could be used actually fixing it or mitigating it or figuring out how to, you know, move beyond and kind of get back to the mission. Well, when you allow that data to do the work, we call it at Splunk finding mean time to innocence. You know, you can now stop pointing fingers at each other because you can let the technology do the work so you can execute on the mission.
Splunk helps agencies turn data into doing. Learn more. Visit splunk.com/public sector. That's splunk.com/public sector.
Here's Aaron Heffron, the president of Market Connections on Market Chat, bringing clarity to the clutter in government marketing.
In a demonstration, it seems much more personal, and you can create that sort of connection that with the individual by providing them content. I mean, they may want the product demos, but as part of those product demos, they really want the nuts and bolts of what does it mean.
Listen to the entire discussion at federalnewsnetwork.com, search Market Chat.
Government Marketing University is an innovative learning platform that applies a collaborative, community-based approach towards knowledge sharing and skills development in the field of public sector marketing. Experts from all corners of the U.S. public sector marketplace, marketers, thought leaders, government, media, and sales, are contributing their knowledge to this unique, content-rich platform. Government Marketing University offers training, research, certifications, mentoring, and community resources all in one place. Learn more at gmarku.com.
Hi, I'm Mike Richmond of the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs with this VA Research Nugget. Many people with spinal cord injury are at risk for serious respiratory infections and pneumonia because they can't clear their lungs and airways. To address this problem, VA researchers developed a cough stimulator that's now in clinical use. Stimulators acting on nerves that control the respiratory muscles make more natural breathing possible for many patients with spinal cord injury. The technology reduces the rate of respiratory infections, improves quality of life, and slashes the cost of care for veterans and others with spinal cord injury. VA researchers continue trying to improve the technology. Advances could expand its use in veterans with spinal cord injury, as well as in others who have difficulty coughing, for example, because of strokes or ALS. To learn more about VA research, go to research.va.gov. That's research.va.gov. I'm Mike Richmond.